Now, Enrique's journey, the story of a teenager from Honduras risking his life to find his mother in this country, is the subject of the bestseller Enrique's Journey. Along the way, he travels on top of freight trains and battles bandits and corrupt cops. And it turns out that this journey is nothing out of the ordinary. These days, lots of moms leave their children behind and travel to the U.S. to make enough money to lift their families back home out of poverty. At some point, the children left behind sometimes want a reunion, and their journeys begin. Sonia Nazario is a Johnson County native, and she won a Pulitzer Prize for her stories on Enrique's Journey. She once worked at the Wall Street Journal, and Sonia, welcome to Up to Date. So nice to have you.
Thank you, Steve. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, your interest in this topic came after an experience with a woman who cleaned your house out in Los Angeles. What did she tell you?
Well, she came and cleaned a couple of times a month. We were standing in my kitchen in LA, and I asked her, are you thinking about having any more children? And I thought she just had one young son. Normally a chatty, happy woman, but when I asked her this, she just went completely silent and started sobbing. And she explained to me that she had left four children behind in Guatemala. She said, Sonia, I'm a single mother. My husband left me for another woman. Most days I could feed my children once, maybe twice, but at night they would start crying with hunger. I had nothing to give them. And she showed me in my kitchen how she would gently coax her kids to roll over in bed at night. And she said, I would tell them, sleep face down so that your stomach doesn't growl so much.
Wow.
She said she left them in Guatemala with their grandma, had come north to work in the U.S., and she hadn't seen her children in 12 years. So I don't know if your listeners could imagine not seeing their own children for 12 years. And that was the beginning of my entry into really seeing that there are millions of single mothers who have come to the United States, to Kansas, left children behind. And after not seeing their mother for 5-10 years, these children despair and set off on their own to come and find them.
Well, you say in the prologue to your book that you thought you knew something about the immigrant experience, but what you learned from your housekeeper, Carmen, about mothers who have to choose to leave their kids behind pretty much blew your mind.
It's a terrible choice because many of these women come here and they're taking care of other people's children in childcare as nannies. In LA, 4 out of every 5 live-in nannies has a child left behind in their home country. And these women would tell me, you know, I play with these children I take care of here in the United States. I feed them. I love them. But I'm not there to see my own children take their first steps or hear their first words. I'm not there Christmas morning with my own children. So it's a story of the transformation of who's coming to the United States also, because, you know, I'd written about immigration for decades, and I thought, you know, migrants who came here unlawfully, overwhelmingly men, right? Mm-hmm. But no, today 51% of the nearly 12 million who are here unlawfully are actually women and children. And so this is really the shift that's occurred, not just of migrants coming to the U.S., but worldwide. More women are migrating. There's more and more family disintegration, divorce throughout Latin America, and that's changing the face of who's coming to places like Kansas.
Well, and the rub is, it seems to me, that these mothers, I guess the good news is they're able to send money home, but their absence results in some very grave consequences for the kids left behind. Consequences like what, Sonia?
Well, yes. I mean, if you come here, you are going to send money back every month, and your children will eat, and they'll study. My house cleaner was only able to study to the 3rd grade, so she was able materially to provide a much better life for her 4 children. But the downside of that is if you spend 5 or 10 years, which is typical, apart from your children, and I've interviewed hundreds of these kids, they will resent and walk up to the line of hating you for leaving them. They just don't understand it. Every one of them tells me, I would have rather had my mother by my side to love, protect me, then had her in the United States sending the Nike shoes and the soccer ball and, yeah, even the money to be able to eat. So what results when they finally reunify with their mothers is this huge conflict. These resentments kind of arise, and they say, you abandoned me. And these mothers feel like they've got these ungrateful brats on their hands saying, you know, I did this all for you. I worked two jobs. I lived in an apartment with three other families. I scrimped to pay my bills here, send money to you every night, every month to pay the smuggler $8,000 to bring each child from Central America. I lived with a photo album with 10 snapshots of my children so you could have a better life. And now you're throwing this in my face. And so there are these huge conflicts and there is social fallout from this because these kids think they're going to have that great love when they're with their mothers finally. And they don't find it there. And so they look for that disproportionately in gangs or the girls getting pregnant with an older guy to get out of these very conflicted homes.
We're visiting with Sonia Nazario. Again, she's a Johnson County native. Her best-selling book, Enrique's Journey. So there are consequences for the family, Sonia, and there are consequences then for the native countries where these kids come from, too. Tell us about that.
Well, there's been some really horrible things happening in Central America in recent years. The consequences of these women migrants leaving is that these countries lose really the most creative people. The people with the most get up and go are the migrants who are willing to leave everything they know and love to fling themselves out into the unknown. I mean, that's what my parents did. They came from Argentina and landed in Lenexa and in Overland Park. And it takes a lot of gumption to do that. So those countries lose people who have that. But what we've really seen is more recently, the reason why we saw this surge in children happening this summer is that we've seen an advent of enormous violence in Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. These places, Honduras has the highest homicide rate in the world. And a lot of that is because of what's demand for drugs in the United States. Our country has spent about $8 billion to disrupt the flow of cocaine coming from Latin America, Colombia, Venezuela, up the Caribbean corridor. And what that did was the narco cartel simply rerouted inland to Honduras, which is where they're landing four and five of these cocaine flights. And they're battling to control that turf, and they are recruiting children to be their foot soldiers in that battle. And these children are facing, you know, I went back to Honduras in July, and I saw children like Christian, a boy who's 11 years old, saying, you know, these narco cartels and the gangs that report to them, they are threatening me to use crack cocaine as I'm leaving my elementary school. Hmm. There are elementary schools that are controlled by the cartels. And if I don't use these drugs and get hooked on crack and start working for them, they will beat me up or they'll do worse to me. He knew three children who had been killed in the first 6 months of last year. And so, you know, his father had been killed by the gangs. These are enormously violent places. And so what the UN has found more recently, very different from when Enrique came, the boy I wrote this story through more than a decade ago, the children who are coming now, 6 in 10 of them are likely refugees. That's someone who's being persecuted in their home country, and their government cannot or will not protect them. And they literally are fleeing for their lives.
Sonia Nazario will speak at 1:30 Monday afternoon at Donnelly College's Community Events Center in Kansas City, Kansas. Tickets are required. RSVP to N Fancher. That's N-F-A-N-S-H-E-R. At donley.edu to reserve a seat. And I'll put that email address out again later on this hour. How did you find Enrique?
Well, I wanted to tell the story of these, you know, tens of thousands of children who make this journey every year to come in search of their mothers through one boy's true story. And I found Enrique in northern Mexico, and I hoped that he would make it on to his mother in the United States. These children often start in Central America with only two things on them. They have a tiny scrap of paper with their mother's phone number inked on it, And it was amazing to me, these kids would, they would stuff that piece of paper in the sole of their shoe, waistband of their jeans, wrap it in plastic so when they cross rivers, that precious number wouldn't smudge. And he had a question, you know, does my mother really love me? Because she said she would come back or send for me quickly, and she hasn't. So he had those two things on him. And these children had virtually no money, like Enrique had almost no money. So they go the only way that they can through Mexico, which is clinging to the tops and sides of these freight trains that travel up the length of the country. And he had faced what all of these children face, bandits who control the rail routes, gangsters who control the tops of the trains that roam from car to car, accosting these migrants, corrupt cops. I documented a dozen police agencies that target these children, these migrants on top of these trains. And all of these actors are trying to rob, beat, rape, or kill these children, these child migrants. It truly is a modern day odyssey that he went on. So I met him. He was already in northern Mexico. He had made 7 attempts.
I was going to say, this wasn't the first time he tried it. Yeah.
No, he was on his 8th attempt to get through Mexico. And I spent a couple of weeks with him there in Nuevo Laredo, right across from Laredo, Texas, seeing what he was going through. He was sleeping outside on the muddy banks of the Rio Grande, just trying to survive. And I saw everything he was going through. And then I wanted to document what this journey was like for these children. So I went back after spending that time with him to his grandma's home in Honduras. And I did that journey step by step, just like he had done it a few weeks before. So I would spend 3 months traveling 1,600 miles, and about half of that on top of 7 freight trains up the length of Mexico. And I can tell you, I still have some post-traumatic stress these many years later.
I was going to say, why did you try to recreate that, given the dangers involved to yourself? I mean, I've been a reporter for a long time myself, and there are things you do, but you really took it to the extent of what a reporter ought to be thinking about.
Well, you know, I found in my many trips a year back to Kansas every year and other places in the U.S. that Americans don't really understand. What is it that people are why are people leaving places like Honduras?
We don't want to think about it.
We don't want to think about it. And what is a child willing to do to get through Mexico to reach the United States? I mean, I interviewed a boy who had lost his leg to that freight train 3 weeks before, and I watched him get back up on that train in a level of determination that is difficult for Americans to fathom. I interviewed a boy, tried 27 times to get through Mexico. And the day I interviewed him, he had been accosted by these gangs. They had taken the girl and his party into a neighboring cornfield and one by one raped her. The immigration authorities in Mexico were going to deport him. And he said, today they'll deport me. Tomorrow I make attempt number 28 to reach my mother in the United States. No wall is going to stop a person who is that determined. We are spending billions of dollars on useless walls. 97% of people who try repeatedly to breach that wall are able to do so, studies show. So what are people willing to do? And who are your new neighbors in Olathe or in Shawnee or in Lenexa? Who are your new neighbors? Who are these women and children? And so I really wanted people to feel like they were sitting on top of that train next to Enrique with all the things he goes through. He goes through horrific things. He's almost beaten to death on top of that train. And he goes through wonderful things. There are places in the middle of Mexico, and you know, most of these kids, just in the first state of Mexico, of 13 they have to cross, the majority of them are beaten or robbed or raped. One of those things.
That's in Chiapas, down in the southern part of Mexico. Then you get up to the middle part of the country, what you're talking about, Veracruz, where you see maybe the better side of humanity.
That's right. And in Veracruz, so these children are completely traumatized. Enrique has 6 guys that creep up these ladders in the middle of the night. They throw him face down on the train in Chiapas. They beat his face with a wooden club, shatter his teeth, strip
off his
clothes.
All that was hard to read. Yes, you just couldn't believe it.
He has to fling himself off. They leave him with his underwear covered in blood, eyes filled with blood. I mean, he barely survives this near lethal beating. But in the south central state of Veracruz, migrants had told me these stories that where there's a curve in the tracks, some reason that train has to slow down. In these little towns, when people hear the whistle of the train, I would see 10, 30 people run out of their huts with these bundles of food in their arms. And they would all wave and smile and shout out to these migrants on top of the train. And they threw bread and tortillas and whatever fruit was in season. When I was on top of the train, they were throwing big bunches of bananas on top of me. And if they didn't have fruit or food, they would throw bottles of tap water. And if they didn't have that, they would line up next to the train and put their hands together. And they would say a silent prayer for these migrants as they pass by. And it's so moving to watch because these folks make a dollar a day, barely feeding their own children. But they were giving to complete strangers from other lands. And all of them said to me, Sonia, I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. It's the Christian thing. I may not have read the 92 references to the stranger in the Old Testament, but I know this is what Jesus would do if he were standing in my shoes. And, you know, we've seen both responses in the United States to unlawful migration. And I see this as a complex issue with many shades of gray. There are positives to this influx and there are negatives. And it depends on who you are in this country, whether it's more positive or more negative for you. But we've also seen both responses, very hateful responses, but also I've seen in churches in this country, very humanitarian responses, especially recognizing that these migrants, they are different from those who came 10 years ago. Many of them are fleeing for their lives. And we ask other countries, the countries surrounding Syria, to take in millions of refugees. We've signed protocols saying that we will help on a humanitarian level people who are fleeing their countries because they fear for their lives. And yet President Obama and this Congress are trying to send as many of these children back as possible to their home countries. And I think our response, quite honestly, in terms of illegal migration, can be, we can have a full-throated debate about that. But I think our response to these children has been quite disgraceful.
Sonia Nazario is my guest. She's the author of Enrique's Journey, the bestseller. She won a Pulitzer Prize writing stories about Enrique's journey for the Los Angeles Times. You know, I would have liked to have been a fly in the wall as you had conversations with your husband about your interest in taking that journey north like Enrique did. I bet those were some interesting conversations, Sonia.
Well, you know, they were. He's a very tolerant man.
I was going to say.
I don't have children or I would not have done this very dangerous journey. And, you know, I did try to build in as many safety nets as possible. I got a letter from the personal assistant to the president of Mexico, and that kept me out of jail three times along the way.
But smart move, by the way. Yeah.
Thank you. I did have many near misses. My first train ride, I interviewed dozens of these kids in our immigration authorities now have 83 detention facilities spread across the United States just for children coming into the United States without a parent and unlawfully, to give you a sense of the magnitude of this. And we've seen the numbers increase tenfold last year over 3 years ago. So it was quite a surge. But I had talked to these kids in these detention facilities saying, you know, can you please tell me everything that happens in Mexico on that map, the bad things, because Sonia would really like to avoid all of those things. And none of them mentioned these branches that envelop the tops of the trains. The south of Mexico is very jungle-like. It's lush.
And you got hit right in the face by one of them.
Yes, there were about 100 migrants on this train, and yours truly, and the ones closest to the locomotive started yelling back a warning, Rama, branch. I could not hear what they were saying, and I'm holding on for dear life with both hands because the train bucks violently from side to side. Didn't hear the warning, and it smacked me, this branch, right in the face, sent me sprawling back almost off this car. I grabbed onto a rail on the side of the car, pulled myself back up on top. When the train stopped the next day, there were two teens on the car behind mine. They said another teen with them had been swiped off by the same branch that hit me, and that he was likely dead because as these trains move forward, they produce this sucking wind underneath. So it actually, it pulls you into the wheels as you fall down. Mm. So yes, my husband and I had a gangster try to grab me. I was able to get away from him. and hop forward on the car and beg the conductor to save me from this guy. So I did have to go into therapy for about 6 months. I had post-traumatic stress and to make those nightmares that I was having stop. And when I retraced the journey a second time, 3 more months to expand what was a newspaper story into a much longer book, I wanted to stay ride the trains again, because if you just sit there, you know, and shut up and watch, migrants will do. There's this whole world that unfolds on top of these trains, and it adds to that yeah. narrative. But my husband explained, "You think you're going to ride on those trains again? You don't have to worry about the gangsters killing you. I'm going to finish you off first." So my train riding days were over. I went alongside the rails that time.
I'm just wondering, in the few minutes we have left, how did your views on immigration reform change as a result of your experience writing and reporting on Enrique's journey?
Well, you know, I think both the left and the right have it wrong. I think we keep trying the same three approaches. And I think my fundamental conclusion, and this is what I found with my own parents, most immigrants would rather stay in their home country with everything that they know and dearly love, their language, their culture, their children. And many migrants in Central America feel forced to leave these countries, either because of violence, corruption, these economic conditions, lack of economic opportunity. The three approaches that we've taken to permanently slowing the flow over these many decades simply have not worked. Whether it's greater border enforcement, we spend $18 billion a year now at this. And what has that done? Well, if 10 years ago, half of the Mexicans who came, they went home within a year because mm-hmm. they want to go home. Now fewer than a quarter do, because it's getting harder to get in. Smuggling rates keep going up. So they come here and they stay. And knowing that they're going to stay, they bring their friends and family members more readily. The second approach we've taken is guest worker programs. The last big one ended in 1964, and the Bracero program. Guest workers are supposed to come and go home after a certain period of time, but more than half of the braceros did not go home, and they created the foundation of the wave of migration that followed from Mexico. So that hasn't been very effective. And the third prong has been to legalize those who are here without permission. And we last did that in 1986. We went from about 3 million here unlawfully to 1 million, but then they brought their friends and family members without permission, and we're now at nearly 12 million. So I'm not strong in math, as my high school teachers at Northwest High will tell you, but I would say that didn't work out as our political leaders promised. So I think instead of keep trying things that haven't worked, we need to radically change our approach and push our government to have a foreign policy that is centered on bringing every tool we have at our disposal to trying to change conditions in four countries that send 3/4 of the folks coming here illegally. And this is very important right now, because Congress is debating President Obama's proposal, which I really support, of tripling foreign aid to Central America mm-hmm. to $1 billion a year. Of course, that's a fraction of what we're spending on border enforcement. But I think we need to programs, and there are programs that work. I was very cynical about this before, but I have seen programs that can work to reduce corruption. We need to strengthen institutions like the police and the courts and other institutions in places like Honduras. So you need to strengthen these institutions so they can battle these narco cartels, because, the money these cartels are now bringing into Honduras is greater than the whole GDP of Honduras. Huh. So they can bribe a lot of people.
Yeah.
We need to help educate girls. If you educate girls, they put off having kids till they're older. And Mexico has promoted family planning. They've gone from 7 kids per family to 2. That has done more to reduce migration from Mexico, which is way down. It's at 1970s levels, than anything that our government has tried. I think we need microloan programs for women, loans that help them start small businesses. We need trade policies that give preference to these countries, like we did to South Korea and other countries, to help them get on their feet. Allow more goods that are produced in Honduras than other countries, if that will permanently slow the flow. I think there's a lot of things we have in our toolbox. if we truly put our minds to this rather than just screaming at each other from opposite sides of the political divide, which is mostly what we do, and certainly what some people in Kansas try to do, like Kris Kobach.
So, and that, we'll have to leave our conversation there. Kris Kobach has been a frequent topic of conversation on this program. Sonia Nazario is the author of the bestseller Enrique's Journey. She speaks at 1:30 on Monday at Donnelly College's Community Events Center in Kansas City, Kansas. Tickets are not required, but you want to RSVP to ensure a seat. N. Fancher, N as in Nancy, F-A-N-S-H-E-R at donnelly.edu to reserve your seat. Sonia, thanks so much for your time. I really enjoyed having you.
Thank you, Steve, and a shout out to my family in Kansas City.
Sounds good. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.